Session number 8320.
Phil Davies, Reel 2. You were telling me about your company officers.
Yes, one in particular, who, Captain Grover, his name was, and he stayed with me, or I stayed with him, until he left to go and take over the Warwicks, to command the Warwickshire Regiment. But he was exceptionally good. And we had another fellow. He was the brother of Owen Nares, an actor. Does that ring a bell? Owen Nares?
Not with me, I'm afraid, no.
No. Yes. He didn't come out with us. He didn't. He stayed in England.
Was there a social distance between you as a sergeant and the officers?
Yes, quite a lot. The only time we had a get-together was when we sergeants had a bit of a binge one night, and we invited the officers to come to it. And that's when Kelly fell in the sludge outside the hut.
How did that happen?
I think somebody pushed him. But nothing upset him at all. He was a real good hand.
How did you get on in the sergeant's mess? Did you get on well with the other sergeants?
Yes. There's Sergeant Catlow. That was Clary Catlow, Reggie Catlow, Poole. My favourite was my company sergeant major, who was Ginger Harp, who got killed in Gallipoli. A very, very nice fellow. Exceptionally nice.
So you were all friends together, really?
Oh, yes.
Did you have any sort of mess routines or protocol like the officers did, or were you very free and easy in the mess?
No, the higher ranks, the company sergeant majors, they had a table of their own, and we underlings, as young sergeants, we finished off this way. One thing that we always did, we didn't have when we'd had the evening meal at supper time, this is, we used to go into the mess for our supper and a drink of beer perhaps. And we young sergeants had to go into the cookhouse and bring the tray of meat in, and then it was taken up to the top table. They had the choice, and then we had what there was left, you see, and there was always plenty. It was a nice arrangement, and again, we didn't really need the meat at all, but there we did.
Looking at your training as a whole, had you reached on the physical front? Were the men physically fit?
Yes, exceptionally well trained, well fit. We did our physical jokes, of course, and did them thoroughly too. Right from hands down and all that kind of thing, and they enjoyed it, the fellows did, and we used to have a rouse parade before. That was the first thing. A rouse parade was a run around the camp, perhaps a mile or so, and then by then our cup of tea was ready for breakfast time. It all worked very, very well indeed. We had weekends off, of course. Saturday, if we were, I used to go up to London, as a matter of fact. What did it cost us? Oh, I can't remember. It must have only been shillings, because we used to get the train from Brookwood right into London to Victoria Station. Then went round London, went to the Palladium, had a shilling to go in, it was. Went to the Union Jack Club for a drink of tea at lunchtime. Perhaps went to one of the art galleries, perhaps the Tate Gallery on the front there, and museum, the different museums. I thoroughly enjoyed my trips in London. I'd been there in 1912 and 13 and in 14. Yes.
How did you get on with the civilian population, both in London and in roundabouts, the camps in Salisbury Plain? Did you get on well with them?
Yes. What used to happen when we were coming back by train, the train would stop at one of the stations quite a time before we got into the station at Brookfield, at Brookwood. And whenever it stopped, there was always a bunch of girls all trying to talk to us. And there was, we sergeants, we were all together in one compartment that time. And there was a girl came up and she had a green dress on. She was awfully nice. And she poked her head through. She said, "I think I'd like to go out with you." So I said, "Well, you'll have to ask me dad." That was to the elderly sergeant in the other side. She shut up then. Just remember that bit. We'd get home at about 12 o'clock from London and then walk over the canal bridge and into the guards camp, and we'd be in at about 2 o'clock in the morning. Then parade, of course, was Monday morning then. That was one of our Sunday trips out.
So you got got on very well with the civilian population. They were very fond of you and affectionate towards you. And
never had any trouble. The only trouble I had once was I used to send my singlets to be washed by the local people. And one of my singlets didn't turn up once. And Mother just fixed me up with two new ones. And they pinched my odd one. That was the only time I was disturbed. The only time.
During your training, how had you fitted in with the whole sort of military lifestyle and the discipline and the lack of privacy? Did you fit in easily, or did you resent it slightly?
Easily.
Why was that, do you think?
I don't know, I was enjoying the whole thing.
Perhaps, did your scout training help you? Because did that help?
Had a great bearing. A great bearing on it. And I needed to be learning all the time, watching other units, other platoons. Did they do quite as well as ours? And
you seem to have been very competitive.
We were, yes. Every sergeant, every person looking after a platoon, his platoon was best, you know. Clary Catlow's was good and so on.
So it was a friendly competition, I presume?
Oh, yes. Yes, there was no awkwardness, none at all. And everybody seemed to be training, all keen to be on top of the job.
You said the men were very fit. Did you feel that the training you'd had was the right sort of training for the sort of fighting they were to face at Gallipoli? Or did you feel it was perhaps a little bit outdated what they were practicing?
No. We thought we were the best trained lot to go along. And when we embarked to go away, we got on a boat at Avonmouth. And we got on a boat.
Were you given any sort of send-off when you left
your
camps?
No, I had to tell you that. Oh, yes, we did. When we left Brookwood, we had a little send-off. Some relatives of some of the lads, Ginger Harp's wife, and Ginger Harp, and my company sergeant major, as I walked along to go to the station, he said to his wife, "I won't be long." And I thought to myself, I'd like to be able to help him and see that he did come back, but of course he didn't.
So it was just a show of relatives when you left Brookwood?
Yes, it was his wife and two children, I think he had. Two little boys. And
did you know where you were going when you left the camps?
Yes.
You knew you were going to Gallipoli?
Yes, we knew we were going up the Mediterranean. We didn't know just then.
Did you guess Gallipoli?
Did we guess? Mm. Yes. We'd heard at Malta that the hill had been taken. That was the hill at Chibaba, had been taken by the troops there. Well, they actually hadn't, but they'd gone a good way towards it. For instance, they were about 2.5 miles up one side. And
did you know, had Gallipoli got any particular reputation? When was it a place that was looked on as a good front to be sent to, or a bad front, or just any old front?
No, we were in with equipment, with helmets. We knew we were going to a warm shop, and we had all light attire.
But did you? Were you worried about being sent to Gallipoli, or did you just take it as it came?
Well, it was like a cook's tour, the beginning of one. We pulled in at Malta. We were on a good ship, the Ivernia, and we had the whole of our battalion, and the Wilts, they were on as well. Now, it meant about 2,000 or more on the Ivernia. We were a little bit short of space. We spent our time playing chess, which we didn't know much about. Mm-hmm. Then
was there a lot of room? Where were you sleeping?
Oh, bunks, and some had bunks and some had hammocks. I didn't like hammocks. We couldn't get really comfortable.
Was the food still good?
The food was very good, yes.
You embarked on the 26th of June 1915, that's right, isn't it?
That's about there. Mm.
What sort of duties did you have on board as a sergeant?
Not much. It was a case of relaxation, really. And
you didn't have keep fit classes and that sort of thing?
No, we didn't. We did no exercise at all on the boat.
Were you aware of the submarine threat?
Yes, we had a destroyer. Or did we have two destroyers? And they were kept going crisscrossing in front of us. And we had a paraplane out. Just
a net attachment thing?
Yes. That was ahead of the boat. I didn't see much of that.
You weren't. Were you yourself worried about submarines, or
no? No, never had a thought about it really. He landed with, it was a coal-fired boat, you know, vessel, and we coaled at Malta. Malta was very nice. We didn't go ashore, but the bumboats came out and some of us got bits of things, like oranges and things like that. Then we went on to Alexandria.
Did you disembark at Alexandria?
The troops had a day out, but me, no officer, remember? My 21st birthday, we had to unload a lot of great big shells. It took 2 or 3 hours, they were so big, to move about.
Well, where were you unloading them from?
From the vessel we'd been on, the Ivernia, and we were putting them on the shore to be picked up later on to wherever we were going. We didn't know exactly where we were going even then. And we went up to Mudras.
Before we go on to that,
yeah.
When you sailed out there, did you have any conception of being part of a brigade or of a division? And did you in actual fact know what brigade and division you were in?
We knew we were in the 13th Division. We didn't like the idea of it being the 13th, but it was a good division.
Did you felt part of the division, did you?
Yes.
What about your brigade? Can you remember what that was?
We were the 40th Brigade. Not much about them. My brigadier, I wouldn't know his name, Hunter Weston, I think his name was. But not much about the other top shelf.
What? So you were at Alexandria. How long did you stay at Alexandria?
2 days.
So you never actually left the Ivernia?
No, I didn't. But the other troops, they did. They had a march around Alec. I didn't go ashore.
You were doing the shells.
And I complained to one or two of the officers. I thought, it's a bit of a beggar. 21st birthday, unloading shells. So
you then went to Mudros, sailed up to Mudros. Still on the Ivernia. And what happened at Mudros?
We were taken ashore. We had very few rations, tea and biscuits. Very few rations.
You actually went hungry, did you, while you were on Mudros?
No, we were not hungry, but there was no variety or anything like that. We went to a village at night time and we could get eggs and fried eggs, weren't they? Egg and chips we had once. Anyway, we were only there for 2 or 3 days.
Did you slept ashore, did you, in camp?
Oh, yes. On the floor, of course, not in camps. Not with no tents. No, nothing at all.
Did you do any training, any landing training or anything like that?
None. No.
So what did you do during the day? Just
wrote home. That's about all, I think. Didn't sleep very well at night. The noise of the crickets and so on, there were thousands of them all night through, kept you waiting.
Were you nervous at all? Because you must have known now that you were going to Gallipoli. Did you feel nervous about what was to come?
Oh, we went bathing, as a matter of fact, on a little lake there, and the water was so salty, you couldn't get in the water, you stayed on the top of it. Yeah. So we couldn't swim very well on that. Then of course, we were split up a bit then. And of course, the Wilts, I don't know how they, where they went to. We in the Cheshires, we got on a boat called the Whitby Abbey, and then we landed alongside the River Clyde. The River Clyde was the big ship that the coal mine, a collier, which had been run ashore to let the East Lancs get off. There were holes in the side of the ship.
This was on, so you landed on the 12th of July, 1915.
Mm-hmm.
Just ask you a few questions about, before you left Mudros, or even on the journey on the Whitby Abbey, was it a trawler you said? Were you briefed at all about what you were going to do, or where you were going, or what was happening on Gallipoli, or were you briefed by your officers, or did you just not know what was happening?
No briefing at all. We were just going to land, that's all.
What was your first impression of Gallipoli as you came towards it and as you landed?
It looked foul, actually. It was a dirty, misty morning, and it smelt something terrible.
Even from offshore?
Even offshore. And then we landed along one side of the River Clyde, and we got on the River Clyde itself, and then out of the open portions onto a gangway, and then we could see the hills there, and some troops about, a lot of barbed wire entanglements. That's where the Lancashire Fusiliers lost a lot of men. And then I was groping about and looking, and I heard somebody say, "Come on, they'll be shelling soon." So we had to make tracks, and we finally got off on the shore and marched for about 2 miles along the coast.
Along the coast?
Along the coast.
Which way did you go? To east or west? Or
it would be
towards W Beach, was it? Or towards
up to W Beach, yes. That was afterwards called Lancashire Landing, wasn't it?
W Beach, yes.
Mm. That's as far as we went. Then we went up the hill, and we saw a fellow with dysentery. The first one to see with dysentery, he was covered in flies.
Was he dead? No,
he wasn't dead. We thought he was. He was covered in flies, and Captain Gover said, "No, leave him now, leave him alone. Somebody will pick him up and take him away." And then he gave us a lecture on our drinking water. Now, we had to be very careful.
Can you remember anything he said?
Pardon?
Can you remember what he said? Did you take him seriously?
Oh, yes, we took him seriously. All right. He was an officer who was very thoughtful.
When you saw this dysentery victim, was it what you thought the war was going to be about? Or did it give you a bit of a shock when you saw this?
Gave us all a shock when we saw him there. He was crumpled up. He was crumpled up with his head down. We never saw his face at all. And he was covered in black flies.
And what sort of thoughts went through your mind? Can you remember?
We said, I think we thought we'd come to a very poor place. Nothing very exciting. Anyway,
had you been under fire by this time?
No. Only in this, we could hear the firing of the shells and the shells coming over from Chanuk. That's the Asiatic side. And they were firing probably at where the Lancashire Fusiliers were.
Were the beach areas very busy?
Oh, yes.
Can you set the scene? Can you tell what you could see on the beach areas?
Yes. lots of horses. Lots of horses all against the cliff side. The cliff had been sheared away by the Royal Engineers, and they were all in quite a lot of them, hundreds of horses, I should think. I don't know who they belonged to or what they were for. I suppose they were belonged to the artillery. And then we were pushed up a hill.
From W Beach?
Yes, from there. And we anchored there. That was a Saturday afternoon, I think. Saturday. Yes. Oh, and we were allowed to bathe from there. And I went swimming. And I was a good swimmer. And I swam for a bit and then found that I was, instead of just swimming normally, I was being towed away. It must have been a current that carried me towards Cape Helles again. And I had a job to swim. And finally, I landed below the divisional headquarters, about a mile away.
It must have been quite a strong current then.
It must have been. And anyway, I had no clothes on at all, of course. Absolutely cleaned up, you know. And when I was passing divisional headquarters, somebody came along and wanted to know all about me, where'd I come from, who I was. Was I a good swimmer? I said, I'm pretty good, or I wouldn't have landed. And they let me go then, and then I had that mile or so to walk up to where I'd left me clothes and got them on.
Were the troops laughing at you? Were everybody around laughing at you? Or?
No, no one took any notice. No. We were all in our nothings at all, you know, when we were bathing.